This meeting of the House Special Committee on Military and Veteran Affairs will now come to order. It is 10:20 a.m. on Tuesday, February 24th, 2026. We are in the Capitol Room 124. Our members present include Representative Gray, Representative David Nelson, Representative Hall, Representative Sadler, and Representative Fields. And of course, myself, Representative Aishai Chair. Let the record reflect we do have a quorum to conduct business. Please remember to silence your cell phones for the meeting. Thank you. I would like to extend thank yous to Cal Brown from House Records and Zachary Lawhorn from the Juno LIO and my committee aide, Aaron Callahan, for staffing the committee meeting today. We have one item on the agenda today, House Bill 256, an act relating to public school students connected to the military, relating to school funding for Purple Star designations, and providing for an effective date by Representative Will Stapp. This is the first hearing on this bill. It looks like we are waiting for the representative, so we're going to take a brief at ease while we wait for Representative Will Stapp to join us. At ease. back on the record. As stated previously, this is the first hearing on this bill. Here to present is Representative Staff and his staff, Bernard Aoto. Welcome. Please put yourself on the record and give us an overview of the bill.
For the record, my name is Representative Will Stapp. I represent House District 32, East Fairbanks, Fort Wainwright, and Badger. And this is my staff, Bernard Aoto. Bernard?
For the record, Bernard Aoto, staff to Representative Stapp.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to present HB 256 today. And with the permission of the chair, I'll go ahead and kind of get into the bill and the details and what it does. Chair?
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Eisscheid. HB 256 does primarily two things. First thing is it updates and clarifies and strengthens the Interstate Compact on Educational Opportunities for Military Children. That's called the MIC3, providing a timeline for resources and support and defining really the role of the State Council. The second thing it does, it codifies the Purple Star School Program in statute and provides an incentive and structure to support the growth and maintenance of Purple Star schools in the state of Alaska. So just a little history here. Alaska was the 19th state to enter the MIC3 compact when HB 137, carried by Representative Coghill at the time, a few years ago now, in 2009. And the primary issues that it dealt with were noted amongst military families of the compact include, one, the transfer of records. There are really no universally agreed upon instances and standards for transferring records from kind of out-of-state schools into our school systems in Alaska. And that would lead to delays for months. And, of course, when you have military influx and outflux of students and their records are delayed, that obviously can affect enrollment and money and all the types of stuff through the state's foundation formula. And it could also any inappropriate course in special education placement, too, if you get into the kind of ILP stuff. The other issue was graduation and curriculum variations. Despite the compact, some schools, districts still struggle to align different state requirements for graduation, course credits, exit exams, and that would create hurdles for high school seniors, especially if they were transferring in and out of districts kind of later in their academic career in K-12. And the final thing was interpretation and compliance. The local school districts may not fully understand or consistently apply principles and rules regarding enrollment, placement, and extracurricular participation. And they would often require kind of intervention from state councils. So the Purple Star School Program currently exists in several school districts, and all the ones I'm going to list out at least have one Purple Star school. Anchorage, 7 out of the 95 schools. Those would be Aurora, Orion, Ravenwood Elementary, Greening Middle, Chugiak, Eagle River High School, and Frontier Charter School. Those are all Purple Star schools. Chugach School District, that's Focus Homeschool. They're a Purple Star school. Kodiak, that's Peterson Elementary School and Kodiak School District. Ketchikan 7 schools, and they're currently kind of the leaders in this program. That's Fawn Mountain, Hotailing, Point Higgins Elementary, Shonobar Middle School, Ketchikan High School, Ketchikan Charter School, and Tonga School of the Arts. And Fairbanks, we have 23 schools that are currently Purple Star schools, including my own schools in my little district, Tixuk Brown, Arctic Light. And that's basically an overview of the bill. And I can kick it over to my staff for the sectional analysis, for the permission of the chair.
Yes, please.
Again, for the record, my name is Bernard Aoto, staff to Representative Stapp, and with the permission of the chair, I'm going to go over the sectional analysis of the bill.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to the rest of the committee, on Section 1, Section 1 amends AS 14.17.410/B, which is the public school funding, to add a public school funding component to district adjusted daily average daily membership calculations. So the way that the Purple Star funding factor would be applied would be after the school size factor, district cost factor, special needs factor, and secondary school vocational technical funding factor. After those factors are applied, this Purple Star funding factor would apply. Section 2 amends AS 14.17.420A, which is the funding for special needs, secondary school vocational and technical instruction intensive services, to add the Purple Star school funding factor to the list of special funding components available to school districts. It highlights that in order for a school district to get the Purple Star school funding factor, 75% or more of their schools must be designated a Purple Star school to receive, and it also specifies that that funding factor will be 1.75. Section 3 amends AS14.17.440A, which is state funding for state boarding schools, to ensure that the state boarding schools receive funding consistent with the new Purple Star school designation. This is a technical and conforming change to ensure that the Purple Star funding factor is consistent with other foundation formula funding factors. Section 4 adds a new section to AS14.30, which is the Pupils and Education Program for Pupils section, which requires school districts to provide reasonable accommodations for military-connected students who transfer to an Alaska school district. It directs the receiving school district to ensure that military-connected students who transfer in into the school district receives comparable accommodations on the first day of attendance. A school district must also ensure that a military-connected student with an individualized education program or IEP or a Section 504 plan make a reasonable effort to ensure comparable accommodations within 30 days of the child's first day of attendance in the school district. It also ensures that a school district takes reasonable steps to ensure that a military-connected student transferring out of the school district is provided a physical copy of their school records to the parents, and the school district ensures that the parent or guardian of a military-connected student is aware of all of these requirements upon entering. Section 5 amends AS14.34.30, which is the Interstate Compact on Educational Opportunity for Military Children, specifically the State Council, to codify the State Council on Educational Opportunity for Military Children. This is the currently existing council in the boards and commissions. Section 6 adds new subsections to AS14.34.030, which is the which is again the same area regarding the State Council, that provides clear directives for the Council to include assisting state and local educational agencies, holding public forums for the military community for feedback, and to submit annual reports on the status and effectiveness of opportunities for military-connected students to the House and Senate Education Committees. Section 7 adds Article 2, which it defines as children of military families, and new sections of AS14.34, which is the Interstate Compact, to codify the Purple Star School Program, which recognizes the individual schools that show a commitment to military-connected students and their families in the form of resources or programs. The eligibility requirements in this section mirror the eligibility requirements that are currently in administrative code as applied by DEED. However, it also adds additional eligibility requirements for military or for schools that do not have any military-connected students in them, i.e. there is no military base or military station in the school district. Those requirements or eligibility requirements include emphasizing the importance and honor of military service, such as holding Veterans Day assemblies, celebrating Armed Forces Day, hosting patriotic events, hosting letter-writing campaigns or care package drives for deployed military units, partnering with veterans organizations, recognizing Military Appreciation Month, and ensuring that there are other public service announcements highlighting the value of military service. They can also recognize veteran service to the country and accomplishments of military members to their school's community, highlight if a student within their school is joining or entering the military, and ensuring that their local school board has a copy of their school's application for a Purple Star designation. In this section, it also creates a Purple Star and Military Children Coordinator, which is a position that is dedicated to coordinating and supporting the Purple Star process and interacting with all organizations and government entities to support the compact. This position currently exists in the department. However, this is just adding specific duties and kind of making it its own position rather than what it is now, which is kind of a duty assigned to an existing position. There's also an open enrollment component that specifies that if a school district has an open enrollment policy, that the school district must ensure the policy does not disadvantage a military-connected student due to location or date of enrollment, and allows for the student to remain at the school throughout the completion of the highest grade. Section 8 repeals AS13.34.020, which is a compact administrator. This is the position that I was mentioning earlier that currently exists. Basically, by creating the Purple Star and Military School Coordinator position, it triggers this statute to be repealed since this position would no longer be in place. And then Section 9 sets an effective date for July 1st, 2026. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that's the sectional for the bill.
Thank you. Are there any questions from committee members for the sponsor? Representative Fields.
Through the chair, I just want to make sure I understand it. So other schools could get the Purple Star designation if they do the things on page 12, starting on line 15. So if they hold Veterans Day assemblies, recognize veteran service, sponsor special events, et cetera, et cetera. It's an alternate path. They don't, it's not limited to the path of having military students.
Through the chair to Representative Fields, correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions, Representative Sadler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I do have questions, but it's going to take me a while to digest the bill and the supporting information. So I guess I'd like to reserve the opportunity to ask questions at a future time. I have, you know.
Yeah. Duly noted. Okay. I believe we have. Representative Fields.
Through the chair, it sounds like a great way to increase school funding. What would the cost be if all schools applied for the Purple Heart designation?
For the record, Representative Staff, through the chair, to Representative Fields, a lot is my answer in short. So, yeah, obviously, you know, when you look at kind of how you incentivize the structure. Turns out the department is going to agree with me that incentive structures matter, so they would anticipate every single school in Alaska being able to adopt the designation. Certainly not the intent of the funding multiplier, but I think it is good to bring attention to the bill and the program. So obviously, I'm not going to go try to push forward a $1 billion education bill, even though I like education. Right, because the state doesn't have $1 billion. But I think it is good to highlight the fact that, hey, incentive structures matters, especially when you place them in the state's foundation formula. And you should anticipate that, you know, powerful financial incentives produce powerful change in behavior. Through the chair.
Thank you, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, through the chair. Representative Staff, I appreciate you bringing this forward. In my time in the legislature, I have seen a number of bills, many bills, come through this committee to help make the experience of students transferring to Alaska for their parents' military service to make it more productive and better continuity and better success. Before we can consider the benefits, the relative benefits of this legislation, can you give me a baseline, or can anybody you might have online give me a baseline of what policies we already have in place to support military families and military students in our school system? I know there's some that are DOD funded, some the state does, but it'd be good to have that baseline of understanding that this would be on top of or complementary to what we have.
Yeah, again, for the record, Representative Stapp, through the chair to Representative Sadler. So I have three invited testimony fires who will kind of cover all that material to give you a background in history and really the kind of the model legislation before us regarding updates to the MC3. And I think they'll be able to answer the questions when they do that, but I'll take the question again after if they do not, through the chair.
That was my question. Great. Look forward to that.
Any further questions before we move to invited testimony? Seeing none, for committee's awareness, I believe there were four fiscal notes attached to this, so just for your awareness. Okay, we will now hear invited testimony. I believe Tammy Peralt, Northwest Regional A liaison with the Department of War, is online. Ms. Peralt, please identify yourself, your affiliation for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Eichstein and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tammy Crow. I represent the Department of War and the nearly 7,000 active duty K-12 children learning in the state of Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. We are in support of the policies within House Bill 256. Let me begin by saying in 2025, Penn State completed a multi-year study identifying state-level policies that support military child education. They went back and looked at many of those policies that Alaska has in place, the Military Child Education Compact, which you've heard about, advanced enrollment, which you have heard about, policies that support special education, and many other policies. By looking at that research, they identified best practices, and many of those best practices are what you have already heard about today in the sectional analysis. Let me begin with Section 4, which addresses transfer of IEP and 504 assessments for our special education students. 31% of military parents report that IEPs or 504s go more than 60 days without supportive services and being implemented for their children. 42% report that the prior IEP was either changed or not implemented at all. Section 4 encourages a fix for this. It asks school districts to accept previous IEPs and 504 evaluations, expedite records transfers, and provide comparable accommodations on the first day of a child's attendance. This is good policy, not just for students, but also for school districts. Additionally, the U.S. Department of Education supports this policy. In 2022, they sent a letter to the directors of special education in each state requesting that highly mobile students like military children receive smoother transition processes for their IEPs and 504s. This is additional support outside of the MIC-3 compact that helps our special education families. It's common sense. Then Section 5 and 6. The Penn State research recommended enhancements to clarify the requirements and procedures to improve the implementation of the education compact. It's been around for almost 20 years now, and we've seen what works well in states that are making it run perfectly. These changes are outside of the compact language, and they support the full implementation. Again, common sense approaches to make sure Alaska can fully meet its responsibilities as agreed to within the compact. Section 7 formalizes the Purple Star program. By placing that program in statute, the program will not only endure, but it will ensure it is best serving the schools and students. It will be more than just a plaque or a ceremony. It will truly recognize the credible and valuable support that these schools provide our military service members and our military children. I'd like to note, this isn't just a program for active duty children. This isn't just a program for schools that have a large military population. Our National Guardsmen and Reservists stationed all over Alaska benefit from having their children be part of this program. It creates a connection between the community and military and between the school. This section also identifies the importance of that military child education coordinator, a position that already exists but ensures that it has clarity on what its roles and responsibilities are. And finally, this legislation will ensure that our military families, no matter when they arrive in the state, are not disadvantaged by open enrollment timelines and that they can obtain placement stability, being allowed to remain in a school until graduation. We would like to thank the sponsor of this bill, Representative Stapp, who has served in our military and represents so many military families. We would like to thank his staff and ask that this bill be moved out of committee. I stand for your questions.
Thank you, Ms. Pearl. Are there any questions for Ms. Pearl? Representative Sadler?
Yeah, first a scopy one through the chair. Ms. Pearl, you identified yourself as representing the Department of War. Has Congress made a change in the Department of Defense's name?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler. Thank you so much for that question.
You're very welcome.
Congress has not made the formal change to our name. However, within the department and when representing to external partners outside of Congress, we are using the title Department of War at this time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well answered, well parried. but not welcomed. So a real question then. The question I ask generally, and I'll ask probably each of the three invited testifiers, is what programs do we have in place right now in Alaska schools that do support military families? I will stipulate support and acknowledge the challenges and needs and special challenges that our military families and students bring to Alaska, and in the past have brought legislation to successfully implement programs to help that. So I want to make sure that what we're proposing to do with this bill is complementary to the existing program. So if you would, to the extent of your ability, lay out what kind of policies are in the state of Alaska's educational institutions to help military families.
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, thank you for that question. I'm going to just briefly touch on some of these policies, and then I'd be happy to have a discussion offline with you about them in more detail. First, I want to mention, as you heard about the Military Child Education Compact, and that's the foundation of everything we do to support our military children. It's the state-to-state agreement with all 50 states that ensures that we're transferring records and supporting our military children as they move from state to state. Second, I'd like to mention advanced enrollment. Alaska joined over 40 other states in ensuring military children can enroll prior to arriving in the state and prior to moving into the district. So if a family is still making their way to Alaska, they can get enrolled in the school district before they arrive. That was an excellent policy that I think that you took a part in, Representative Sadler. Additionally, Alaska has ensured that military families are able to access special education needs. You are one of the few states that if a child needs to, if there needs to be a hearing or mediation on what a child needs, that's the responsibility of the school district, not the responsibility of the parents to fund that mediation. That's in your policies, and we appreciate that support. There are other policies that I'm sure I'm forgetting about right now, but I'd be happy to have further conversation with you and my colleagues who are school liaisons in the state of Alaska will be able to dig into those even more, I'm certain.
And I'll appreciate that dialogue. I want to get that on the record as well. But I believe the Department of Defense has programs to have some staffing assistance inside. I know at least in the bases on the base schools to have.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Touch on that, please.
Yeah. Through the chair to Representative Sadler. So you'll be hearing from the school liaisons who work for the installation to support and coordinate for military children. Additionally, the Department of War provides military family life counselors who provide support for our military children at the schools. I also want to highlight that we make a tremendous financial commitment to our schools in Alaska through providing impact aid for each military student who attends a school in Alaska, as well as supporting the construction of schools on military installations. So those millions of dollars also flow to ensure that Alaska is supported to educate military students, and we're grateful for that continued partnership.
Further questions for Ms. Pearl? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, and apologies for not having my French pronunciation today. I believe Janet Ferris, the Fort Wainwright School Liaison Officer, is online. Ms. Ferris, please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Janet Ferris. I am the Fort Wainwright School Liaison Officer. I'm here today to talk about a critical issue that affects the children of our nation's heroes. The Interstate Compact on Educational Opportunities for Military Children, or MIC-3, or as we as liaison love to say, MIC-3. This compact is a process to our military families that their children's education will not be a casualty of their service. However, this promise is facing significant challenges that we must address. The average military child will move 6 to 9 times from kindergarten through 12th grade. The constant upheaval creates incredible hurdles for their educational journey. Different state laws mean variations in enrollment requirements, course placements, and graduation standards. This can lead to delayed graduations, missed opportunities for advanced courses, and exclusion from extracurricular activities. The MIC3 was designed to solve these problems. It's a binding agreement among all 50 states and the District of Columbia to create uniform policies for military-connected students in our public and correspondence schools. However, the compact's effectiveness in Alaska is being undermined by several key issues which can be resolved in HB 256. Alaska has had a high turnover rate of MIC3 commissioners. The commissioner is the primary point of contact and is responsible for the compact's implementation. When a commissioner leaves, it creates a leadership vacuum and a loss of institutional knowledge. In my 6 years as the school liaison officer, there has been 5 different MIC3 commissioners. Compounding this problem is the fact that for many commissioners, this important role is an extra duty with little guidance or support. These dedicated individuals juggle this vital role on top of their primary responsibilities. We are grateful to everyone who has served in this role, especially our current commissioner, Donald Enoch. Each commissioner has done their best to dedicate the time to support the compact. Most critically, due to this turnover, Alaska is rarely in compliance with its obligations under the compact. This includes a failure to submit the required end-of-year report and to have the required annual state meeting. These are not just administrative oversights. They are a failure to uphold our commitment to military families. We have only met the compliance 2 years of my 6 years as school liaison officer. This can make it difficult to dedicate the necessary time and resources to effectively advocate for military children and ensure the compact is being fully implemented. The legislation does 2 things to improve the implementation of the compact in Alaska. Number one, it clarifies the role of the State MIC3 Council, which works under the coordination of the commissioner, ensuring the council has clear guidance on what it shall do to support military children, and requires the council to report annually to the legislator on its work. Please refer to Section 6. Number 2, appropriately staffs the commission by establishing a military children coordinator within the D. MIC3 is a commitment to a set of common sense rules that ease the educational transition for military children. HB 256 will provide supporting legislation, as other states have done, including Utah and Arkansas, to ensure appropriate implementation of the MIC3. According to War Department-sponsored research, state implementation of 4 initiatives to support military-connected students, states have a valuable opportunity to facilitate improved implementation of policies designed to support military-connected children. This research, completed in 2025, specifically highlights the benefits of building upon the State Education Compact statute by embedding detailed operational requirements into agency rules or companion statutes. HB 256 does this. These requirements include timely enrollment, seamless placement, on-time graduation, etc. To uphold our promise to military families, we must address these challenges and find ways to support our Alaskan MIC3 commissioner by providing clarity of council responsibilities and additional resources. Alaska must hold ourselves accountable for meeting all the compact's requirements. The children of our service members make incredible sacrifices. They deserve our unwavering support to ensure they have every opportunity to succeed. Let's work together to strengthen the MiG-3 in Alaska and ensure that no military child is left behind. HB 256 will ensure we are providing the necessary requirements of the compact and ensuring our military-connected students are receiving the necessary support from our state. Thank you. I stand by for your questions.
Thank you, Ms. Ferris. Are there any questions for Ms. Ferris? Representative Sadler?
Thank you. Ms. Ferris, I wonder if you'd be willing to pass along to us the copy of your written testimony. It looks like you might be referring to notes there. If you have notes you'd like to send to the committee so we can review them at our leisure, I'd appreciate that. And my request would go for each of the testifiers if they have any written comments they'd like to submit. I can take notes, but not that fast. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
To the chair, to Representative Sadler, I'd be happy to share my notes with you.
And a follow-up, if I may, a different topic, not a follow-up. Ms. Ferris, you said that there is a high turnover of commissioners. What specifically, and I think you mentioned some of the things that this bill would do, the bill adding staff to help support the commissioners' work would be great, clarifying role and requiring an annual report. Help me understand why, if the commission is having trouble issuing its annual reports and plans a requirement for an additional report, the legislature is going to make things better.
So each year through the Big Three, we have annual meetings. We have annual requirements that we must meet. Those things, as I mentioned, as our end of year report, having a annual state meeting. We do have dues that we pay every year to Big Three to belong to the organization. Because of the high turnover, these goals, these requirements are often passed over because of the amount of time that they are not in that position. For instance, one commissioner was only in the position for 1 month, another commissioner for 3 months. So it, our longest commissioner that we've had is 1 year. That's one of the years that we have met those requirements, and that's through Donald Enoch.
And I'm embarrassed to have to ask this question, but I know that this is not pertaining directly to the legislation for us. Could you give a little more background about the Military Interstate Children's Compact Commission, its composition and mission, actually composition in Alaska? It sounds like you said it's auxiliary duty by somebody else. Just help me get a better, clear understanding of what the MiG-3 Commission is and what it does.
To the chair, to Representative Statler, we have, and I'm more than willing to share this with you, we have statutes that have been developed through to help better support our military-connected students. This is because if you know anything about education, it is federally ran, but it's the umbrella, but it is also controlled state by state. So there's many different regulations and standards. With our children moving as often as they do, there are different regulations and standards that are met from school district to school district, even state to state. That MiG-3 helps our children transition better, to not be held accountable to what in the civilian world they may be held to. They may not sound big, but they are big for our families. Like, for instance, taking hard copies of transition paperwork. That's because that will help them to enroll sooner into school. Taking similar classes at the next duty station in the school district to help them graduate on time, because graduation requirements are different from many school districts, and this helps our students to be able to graduate on time. Even kindergarten, age of enrollment is different from state to state. Because of that MiG-3, if a child is enrolled and attending school, they get to go to kindergarten no matter what the age requirement is in that state. So it's extremely important that we have the support here. If a MiG-3 statute is not being followed, it goes through a line of requirements where first the school liaison officer tries to solve it. If it cannot be solved, it goes all the way to our MiG-3 commissioner, who will then present it to our MiG-3 executive board for ruling if it meets our MIC 3 statutes. That commissioner is extremely important because he or she needs to know those statutes and know how to apply them and work closely with the school liaison officers to make sure that that information is being applied fairly for all of our military-connected students.
And brief follow-up. So in Alaska, we have one commissioner. Is that our one representative among all 50, or is there a council in Alaska?
There's one commissioner per state.
And are they
so
employed?
Each state in the District of Columbia has their own MIC 3 commissioner.
And are they employed by DOD, or are they employed by a school district, or DEED, or
whom? They are employed by DEED. So Donald Enoch works for DEED. Okay. And usually all six of our commissioners have been from DEED.
Thank you.
In which they have a primary role. And then being the MIC 3 commissioner is an extra duty for them.
No extra pay?
No extra pay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Any further questions for Ms. Ferris? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Ferris. I believe Dr. Ernest Kincaid, Eielson Air Force Base School Liaison Officer, is online. Dr. Kincaid, please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great, thank you. My name is Ernest Kincaid, Doctor of Education, and I am the School Liaison Program Manager at Eielson Air Force Base, Alaska. And I come to you on behalf of my commander, Wing Commander Matthew Johnston, and my Group Commander Tim Foster. So I talk to you guys about Purple Star Program as I do in Alaska. I travel all over Alaska asking schools to consider applying for Purple Star status. I give you the same speech I give to them. It is a program designed for recognizing the support resources for military students. But it doesn't just cover military students. Many things that this program do actually bleeds over to students that have no affiliation with the military whatsoever. Everywhere a military family goes, they meet folks that have no affiliation with the military, and they grow those relationships. Everywhere the Purple Star School that are, there are military folks that have traveled from state to state, and they take that that experience with them. So when people come to Alaska, they experience what Alaska is, and that Alaska becomes part of that person, part of that military member, that family member. So that's what Purple Star School does for us, right? And I concentrate on what the military concentrate on all the time, the 4 R's, readiness, retention, recruitment, and the 4th R is where we come in here with resiliency. So we say Purple Star Schools, and often it's also always kind of come alluded with Purple Heart. We don't want to, we almost say when military members, as they travel from place to place, they experience these difficulties, and it seems to make them less prepared. But I'll tell you, having 26 years in the military and having graduated 4 students out of Eielson Air Force Base, Alaska. Purple Star.
Sir, you're being cut out a little bit. We missed the last 10 seconds of what you just said.
All right. So I go to the 4 R's. I assume that's what I missed. The 4 R's is what the military prays on a lot. So it's readiness, retention, recruitment, and resiliency. And resiliency is what the Purple Star program does for our students. And is make sure they're always resilient, they always bounce back, and they know when they go from place to place, they look on the website, and the first thing they look for is that Purple Star emblem for the school they're going to. When they see that emblem, they know the school is already trained, they have resources, and they have someone there in that school that understands what they're going through and understand what the courses are. And so they've been connected to a school liaison like myself and Janet. There's also 2 down in J-Bear, Adele and 1 vacant position. We also support the Coast Guard, and right now I travel all over the state supporting the Coast Guard myself personally. I go and I actually encourage them to apply for Purple Star Schools. I explain the benefits of Purple Star Schools and the connection they have with school liaisons. The Purple Star Schools automatically connect you with the school liaison all over the state. We train the staff on what Purple Star School does, how to improve it, and how to maintain it. And with all we're there, there's a phone call away or a Teams meeting away to train the staff or to support them in the ways that we can. We support them by a month of the military child events. We support them by how to design their Veterans Day events. We get military folks connected to them in their area. If you have a military base in your area, make sure the school is connected to the military base. Right now, I think we're at about 44 states across the union. There's our Purpose Star School either have the policy or in legislation. There's about 25 that actually have legislation and policy already in place. Alaska will be added to that, hopefully, in the near future, that we have a policy. It's important to have a Purpose Star in policy so that I am passionate about being in Purpose Star School. I am passionate about my job. I've been doing this job since 2016. And I'm very passionate about my job. I'd do it for free if I could afford that. I'd do it for free. And oftentimes I do it for free. But what this does is actually have it in policy so that when I disappear and take off, there's somebody to step in with me, behind me, and they'll have a policy to fall on. So in the military, we always fall on policy, and that's how we do everything, by policy. So whether I'm here or not, this will be here solidified in the state. And with that, I end my testimony.
Thank you, Dr. Kincaid. Are there any questions from the committee for Dr. Kincaid? Staffer Bernard Ayato.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Mr. Kincaid. How's it going? What sort of support or financial support do Purple Star schools get currently?
So currently there's very little support. It's mostly funded through personal donations or just generosity from people, teachers, or myself or Janet. We make the arrangements. We fund the ceremonies and all that. So if they want to travel to the ceremony, the ceremony is held every year, either in Anchorage or in Fairbanks. We alternate between those two. So they have to find funding to get to the ceremony. If they want to come to the ceremony, they have to find funding to get the banner put up. So any other thing, they have to fund. Training, we try to encourage training that does not require funding. Myself can train, Jenny can train, Adele down in Hankerson train, so we can get training paid for without having funds for that. But all the other things definitely require some degree of funding.
Any further questions for Dr. Kincaid? Seeing none, I'd like to thank all three of our invited testifiers. And then, are there any final questions at this time from the committee for the bill sponsor? And Bernard, would you like to make any final concluding statements?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bernard Otto, staff to Representative Stapp. And through the chair, a question was noted earlier about the funding piece for the Purple Star School program. And I want to make sure that we inform the committee that we are currently in discussions with Deed about addressing the fiscal note. So there may be some question or maybe some solutions on paring down that fiscal note in the form of maybe not a foundation formula ad, but maybe a grant request through to the individual schools.
Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, about the fiscal note, my staff said it was $900 million. We heard Representative Stapp say $1 billion. So if we added $1 billion to our education budget, would that extra billion, how could it be used?
For the record, Bernardo, through the chair to Representative Gray. I'm just trying to pull out these specific fiscal notes for reference. So the Department of Education assumes that if this program is put into place, every single school district would apply and be granted, so that 75% of schools, all school districts, would be Purple Star. That anticipated cost is equal to about $928 million. Mount Edgecombe also submits a fiscal note saying that they would qualify as well. That's an additional $3.6 million. When it comes to the funding piece of it, I think Representative Stapp would say that although that would be very welcome, it's something that we probably could not afford as a state.
Representative Fields?
I actually support keeping in the foundation formula. And, you know, we could debate whether it should be a 50 or 75% increase, but you know, somewhere in that range sounds reasonable. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. And Mr. Iota, I want to ask you the question kind of for the record. The effort of the purple of the bill and the purple school designation and the extra funding is not really to meet any deficit of military students. It's not that we want to bring them up to an equivalent level of performance as much as it is a way to improve the process by which they arrive at, meet requirements, and graduate from a school. I just want to get that clear. This is not to address any shortcoming. This is just to ensure a fair and more appropriate process so the students can perform based on their own ability and initiative. Is that a fair statement?
Through the chair, or for the record, Bernard Otto, through the chair to Representative Sadler, the idea of the Purple Star school designation is that the schools that apply for this designation do so with an effort to provide resources and support to military-connected students. And as indicated by Dr. Kincaid earlier, after receiving this designation, much of the financial support that these schools receive usually come from the form of payments from the school liaison officers themselves. So the goal of the funding piece for Purple Star schools as envisioned in this bill is to ensure that schools that make an effort to provide resources and support for military-connected students receive some sort of compensation for doing so.
Follow-up.
And I guess this is kind of a general thing. I understand that in the current state foundation formula, there is a significant, I think it's 13 times multiplier on the BSA for special needs students. And the challenge I've heard from some parents of special needs students is that while that funding mechanism is in place, there's no direct linkage between the collection of that money and its actual expenditure for the affected students. I'm going to read the bill carefully to see and understand the purple school designation to see that if there were this additional multiplier in the state's foundation formula, that the money raised would go towards specific purposes to help students and military families and not simply go into the bucket of general funding. You know, I understand the inclination, understand the motivation, I support it, but the execution and the actual place the money goes, we have to make sure it goes where it's targeted. Got to hit the target with the ordinance.
For the record, Bernard Otto, through the chair, to Representative Sadler. So the way that is outlined in the bill is that the Purple Star funding factor would be attributed in the similar instance that the current special needs and vocational school factors are attributed, so it would be basically an increase to the ADM count that would go to the school district for them to dole out in any way they would like. The specific funding factor you're referring to is the intensive need funding factor, that 13-time multiplier. Mm-hmm. That would be applied, that would not be applied until after the Purple Star school designation.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you to the bill sponsor and our invited testifiers for coming before us today. We will set the bill aside for today. Appreciate the discussion. That concludes our agenda. The next House Military Veterans Affairs Committee meeting will be Thursday, February 26, and we will hear House Bill 299 for the first time before this committee, also from Representative Staff. So this meeting of the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee stands adjourned at 11:14 a.m.